songs about rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know that they're wrong. Wait and see.
Do you know that song?
I don't think so. I was waiting for like a hook or something.
The Lovers, the Dreamers, and me.
Where no, is that you don't from? Know that one.
It's from the Muppets movie, 1979. All right, I'm going to give you another one.
Oh, my
one.
Gosh, this you are. So Jade is really a 57-year-old man.
I am.
Name
Raymond. You never saw the Muppets movie?
I know that I have, but I don't remember it like you do. You talk about 1979 like you were here.
Well, the Muppets movie has lived, and it continues to live on to this day.
I'm going to give you
another intro. You're getting okay. Two this week.
Fine.
Since that did not resonate.
It did. I mean, I'm sure it resonated with others. It took me a minute.
All right, hold on. Here we go. What you think about a girl like me? Hey. Got my own car and spend my own money. Only resell it when I'm feeling lonely. When it's all over, please get up and leave. Please don't call me baby, cause I'll call you. Don't be the hurt your feelings, got a lot to do. Cause I am my number one priority. No falling in love, no coming from me. All my independent women throw your hands up at me. And all my sexy women throw your hands up at me. All my inner women throw your hands up at me. All my baller women throw your hands up at me. If you feel it, throw your hands up. If you feel it, throw your hands up.
Oh my gosh.
Woo, shit.
I mean, very
much
of
a... That was a chaotic-ass song. I'm not going to hold you.
And who knew? Who knew? I mean, the children didn't know that independent women, Destiny's Child, sampled that. The girls didn't know.
You know what? I'm not surprised by that.
They didn't know. The young people were.
I'm not surprised by that.
They thought Beyonce wrote that. Nope.
She didn't.
She did not.
At all, actually.
Nope. Not a little bit. Praise the Lord, niggas.
Praise the Lord, niggas.
Welcome back. Welcome, blacks. To the ride, honey, down to the ghettos of adulthood, the worst hood we've ever endeavored to live in. We've missed you guys. How is everyone doing?
Oh my gosh, I feel like we haven't been here in a month of Sundays.
It's been a little while, but let me tell you, last week's spring cleaning episode, honey, slapped, got me right together. I have to tell
right
you,
together.
I don't typically listen back, but... In the spirit of the hard refresh, right? I didn't feel like it would be fair for me to encourage you all to take a listen to the reprise without me also journeying back into some of our kitchen tables of old right along with you.
Absolutely.
And let me tell you, honey, points were being made.
Boots, okay?
Message received.
If you are lost as to what we are talking about, last week we have a compiled gumbo episode that focuses on spring cleaning in many different facets, in the physical sense, in the mental and spiritual sense, in that personal sense, and all of those things. So if you have not listened,
in terms of your
go
space,
back.
In terms of your relationships, family, friends, otherwise, in terms of your goals, your personal successes, things
your head
that you are
space.
Yes, things that you are aspiring towards in this year and beyond. Honey, it was a good time for me. And you know, in the spirit of spring cleaning, I tapped into our auntie spirit. You know how your aunties would tell you, put a little bleach in that water. Put
That's
a little
right.
bleach. You just need a little bleach in that water.
A tinch, in the words of Crystal Jean.
Just a tinch of the bleach in that water. And that's how you know it's clean, for real. So y'all go ahead and take a listen to that episode. It's called Put a Little Bleach in That Water. You're going to get your lives if you haven't gotten them already. But let us know in the comments how if and what resonated with you all from the gumbo episode. Okay?
Absolutely. And I still put a little bleach in my water in a very literal sense. And I know.
I also, too, as well.
like, and I'm not just talking about mop water. That goes without being said.
That's a given.
I put a little bleach in my dishwater.
In the dishwater I have, but also very important for cleaning the bathrooms and...
Oh, what? Yes.
I mean...
Again, without being said, the base of that toilet, all the tub... Of this.
Listen.
Can I tell... You know what?
Bleach and Listerine.
I'm going to save it for the petty peeve, because I do have a petty peeve as it pertains to cleaning, and I never thought that I would ever say that. But I do. So I'm going to put that in my notes right this second that before I forget. But sister, how are you? We haven't recorded live together in weeks.
I know. It's been a little while. But I'm doing... I haven't any complaints. I'm safe and I have what I need. As I was telling you before we started recording... You know, life is lifing and change is changing. Okay? And you know, when you are riding the wave of change, sometimes it's feeling a little rickety, rockety. You don't really know what's coming around the bend. I feel like I'm kind of... I'm in this like, in this limbo-y kind of space. Where it's like, okay, we just gonna ride this thing out and see where we go.
Oh, sister.
But we're trusting and we're believing. You know, work is great. Work is intense. Engaging different partners. And I feel like I'm building different muscles as it relates to my skills, which is good. Which is good. Yes. But you know, with any type of strength training, it hurts before it feels good. Well,
you can't walk the next day.
The soreness, okay? Mm-hmm. All of that, the discomfort. And, you know, I'm in the gym. We're ending out week 4 of the 8-week challenge.
Come on.
Your girl is, let me make sure I say it right, okay? Because, you know, this is a whole new lingo. It's a new culture for me.
Okay. You're going to be speaking German to me, but
yes,
keep going.
I'm making good choices. Taking my vitamins and doing my meal prep. I think the wave is, I saw this TikTok talking about how the girls is we are stepping into the muscle mommy era where the girls are being more comfortable lifting. I think women have grown to recognize the benefits of strength training, particularly lifting heavier.
Okay. And I'm with it.
My trainer is fully aligned with this, and she be having all manner of extremely heavy weights out on the floor. I have to tell you that I am stunned, shocked, and appalled at the taken aback at how much I'm actually able to do when I try. It's crazy.
Because you're stronger than yesterday.
Yes. Literally so. I am like, you know, I'm doing like, I know the terms. Like when somebody says do a RDL, I'm not looking at them like they're speaking another language.
Yes. What is it? Deadlifts, right? Deadlifts?
Yes. Something to that extent. You know, I don't know. But I know the movement. I might not be able to. Yes. But you know, I'm squatting. Today was leg day. I squatted.
Come on, leg day. I hope a couple of niggas joined you.
170 pounds I was squatting.
What? Okay, you see, this is why all the bad bitches are going to be out here with strong calves and muscles and thighs.
I know.
And
it's a whole thing.
If you niggas don't get it together, you're going to keep running around with these little chicken legs looking like pigeons.
Listen, I mean, the science of it is really, it's really been an educational experience. Understanding... Yeah. You know, the body a little bit better, and what it needs, what it requires. And honestly, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I do feel like I'm already starting to see a little bit of progress in myself.
I live.
And I don't have a weight goal. Y'all know that I have broken up with the scale and I'm never going back. But I just want to look amazing. I want to feel amazing. And I'm wanting to accept my body as it is in every step of this journey. So I'm trying to learn how to celebrate my jiggling thighs right now while I'm squatting. I'm trying to celebrate them. And if they should tone up and get a little tighter, then I welcome that. But I'm trying my best to, and I'm doing, you know, shout out to all the people that are helping me and holding me accountable on the Instagrams. I'm posting my little workout videos if you want to see my jiggling tail
fantastic.
And my geriatric burpees. Shout out to all of us who are doing geriatric burpees.
Oh.
Because I have to take my time, okay? Auntie is not trying to get injured down to the gym, okay? So I'm going to take my time.
The last time I went to a boxing class, you know, I thought it was just going to be us throwing snuffs. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't. It was like reps of things and running around and doing shit.
It really is a whole different life. It's a lifestyle.
Burpees. And I was the last fucking person to finish those goddamn burpees.
Whose idea? This is tapping into my petty peeve a little bit, but I will allow it for the sake of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Whoever created the burpee.
Fuck you.
I do not. That's where you're going? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Because what manner of lunacy? Like,
it was a sociopath. It was a sociopath.
This exactly is sociopathic.
Say this.
It is given hellish and horrendous.
It is.
Like, I mean, the amount of steps, it's like, okay, you do the steps, right? She's walking me through the burpee and I do a burpee. She's like, that's one. One? I have done 12 things. What do you mean?
Because there's 75 steps to one burpee.
This is what I'm saying.
Very frustrating.
Talk about we just gonna warm up, just 12 burpees. I'm like, if I do 12 burpees, that's the end of class for me, girl. I'm leaving after that. Write that down.
What? I told you about that one spin class I went to. I got 7 minutes into that bitch and stood next to the bike the rest of the time. Because what are you doing? This lady was rocking back and forth and lifting up on her legs.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't have time for none of this. No.
And I don't know who told me to wait till I got 100 years old to try to get physically fit. But me and my rheumatoid arthritis are doing our very best down to the gym. And I have to say that I am doing better than I thought I would. I would have given up weeks ago, but I'm still showing up to the classes.
You're still standing. You're still strong.
And I'm just trying, and hopefully soon I will have to, I will be one of the, you know, cause I mean, I'm inspired working out amongst people who look like you, who are shaped like you, who be down to the gym in bonnets. Okay. Girls is getting their nails done, lashes. I mean, it's just all of us. It's bad bitches working out. And I love it.
Bad
it's so
inspiring. To the left.
Yes. Money bitches money to the bitches right. Exactly.
Right.
And so it is so powerful because it's like I'm struggling. My sister to the left of me might be struggling, but if we look across the room, there is some young lady over there who is, I mean, wearing this workout out, and you like, well, sis, I'm trying to be like her, okay?
Yeah, she don't want over just, to the. She's like, it should cost a billion. To
yes,
look. Yeah, that's and the so one over good. There it's across good. The way.
It's good. I love it. You know, I told you, and I'm not giving up on Orange Theory. All the other things that I used to do, I still will go. But you know how it is. You know how I will walk around Orange Theory feeling like a giant amongst tiny people, and
yes, that's how I feel always.
Oh yes, I'm sure you do. And but not just height wise, right? It was always be like I could fold everybody in this class. Boom. Like just underneath something. My arm. Like they're just little people. All of these teeny tiny individuals. Are they grown? But it's so good to be walking around a gym and you not the only big booty in the room. It's something about that gives you energy and you be like, well, girl, we all in here thighs just a moving and ain't nothing wrong with it.
No, not at all. Not even a little bit.
I live for us. So shout out to HerFlex Fitness. Some of the girls have come up to me in class and you've seen me struggling and wheezing. And I thank you for your support and thank you for listening. Shout out to Maya. We got to have Maya down to the show one day.
All right, Maya. Come on, Maya.
Because she is on to something and the girls is out here. I mean, she is really a bad bitch factory down to the
HerFlex. Okay, come on. It should cost a billion to look this good.
I mean,
cunty, cunty, honey, honey.
Exactly. So yes, we will, I'll keep you guys apprised of my progress, but we are making progress and I'm glad about it. But I'm not the only one because sister, as I shared with you, I have been down to the podcast listening and enjoying because my sis is hosting. I said, Jade is hosting the hell out of this podcast, y'all.
You see me on my Jade Bar Burton getting my storytelling on.
Jade is giving like a trap Barbara Walters down to the Food Network, okay? It's like if, you know, like it's giving a trap Barbara Walters meets LeVar Burton, okay?
That's what I was channeling, you know what I'm saying?
It's very educational. That. It's very approachable. And it's entertaining and enjoyable to listen to because as a person who just enjoys good food, I love to learn about it. I love to see it. I love to know sort of the history behind it because it really is like just quintessentially Black, right? Mm-hmm. Having good tasting food is who we are as a people. And so I feel like some sort of cultural tie to this program, but I just love.
And you haven't even gotten all of it yet.
I know.
We still got an episode coming up on ancient grains.
Oh, girl.
Where I talk with a farmer who who grows Carolina gold rice as well as.
And you know, I know all about
amazing,
that.
You know, that is our connection.
Period.
As well as my Geechee sister, Amethyst. Shout out to Chef Amethyst. We talked to her of Yolele Foods about Fonio. And then I talked to two Black vegan chefs.
So much good stuff.
One who was raised vegetarian, turned vegan, and one who was a meat-eating big nigga from Austin.
is he still a big nigga?
He's a huge nigga, but he's not
really
as meaty as he was, but he's just a big, sizable man. Shout out to Marlon. I can't say
Marlon.
Big nigga on Heinz, but I can say it here because it's our
right.
show.
That's right.
And as well as the last episode, which I spoke with an amazing food writer named Chala June, as well as the very first host of season one, Adrian Miller, the Soul Food Scholar. So I'm excited for you all to hear the remaining four episodes coming out.
I'm clocked in and I'm just now to the point where I'm just, when the subscription comes up on my phone, I just go ahead and tap listen.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Because I'm like, let me, you know, Jade is down here being a host and I love it.
I had to be professional, y'all. I wasn't on my own shit. And I had to be professional. And it was, I also spoke with this Feud Futurist chef, Nia Lee, shout out to her, as well as Kelly Carlisle of Acting Nonverbal. You all have that coming up as well. Mm. Two ladies out of California, Northern and Southern, doing amazing things in the food space. So I'm so excited that you're actually enjoying it. It was a big, giant labor of love. The team is incredible. I'm so lucky to have worked with them. And I can't wait, you know, for the next iteration of things that roll out from this.
Me too, sister.
Also, while we're here,
very proud.
I want to just thank every single person who showed up to the Amsterdam Dopest Dinner Party.
Yes!
Kia and I are recording. It's currently 10:56 p.m. and I'm still fighting jet lag.
Jet lag. First of all, jet lag ain't no hoe. Hello.
Let me tell you how Europe and jet lag both beat my ass. And I haven't had my ass beat in a minute. So I'm fighting. It's been a busy ass day. Noah performed her school's iteration of the Muppets, hence me opening up.
Oh, well, that explains it. Okay.
Thank
you. You have a current reference. You just act like I ought to be in here watching the Muppets.
But sister,
today.
But the Muppets is still the Rainbow
timeless.
Connection is a classic
it
song.
It is timeless, but I just didn't make the connection immediately.
It's all right. It's okay. If I would have sang it with a little Luther Vandross, I know you would have got it.
We skip and we dip to the beat.
Sorry. Hey!
You know, Luther Vandross's birthday was last week. He would have been 72.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
That's so nuts.
It's
I love me some Luther. And you notice how we've never met another Vandross.
I know. Especially one whose middle name was Ronzoni.
We've never met another Ronzoni. I think I'm going to name my next baby Ronzoni.
I don't think you should. Let us move forward into this
Ronzoni
introduction.
Barrett. Yeah.
Oh my God. Ronzoni Verrett is a choice.
That is elegant.
That is a choice.
It is. He has to be a chef. Because what else are you going to be with Ronzoni Verrett?
Oh, God.
Anyway, continue on because I'm being over here being foolish.
So, listen, another special treat for you guys. Jade and I are doing something that we have never, ever done. Okay?
I just want to say, before you continue on.
Please.
Kia and I, first of all, shout out to our Getting Grown team.
Yeah.
Every single person apart. Helping us to revamp and reshape some things. So the episodes might sound a little different. There may not be the same structure of things all the time that you're used to, but just know that we're heading in a direction that we really love and feel good about. And we have an amazing team behind us who's being really intentional about helping us to organize what we're doing. It's giving growth. It's giving road open. It's giving levitate. And so, yes, like Kia was saying, we did something that we've never done before, and I'm going to leave it back to you.
Yes. So I had the wonderful opportunity to interview someone that's very near and dear to this show. And I, too, was interviewed by someone for the purposes of the next couple of episodes. And I think that this is going to be a bit of a deep dive into who Jade and I are, what we've learned over our journey in getting grown, how the different streams and areas and facets of our work come together and inform our working relationship and our friendship, and just how getting grown is growing up.
Yes, and very rapidly, like kids do.
It's wild. I mean, like a weed. You just turn around and the baby is going to second grade. Like, what?
They're really like life awakening markers for us on how old we're getting when you look at kids. So Getting Grown is our kid. And so like Kia said, we both had the privilege and the honor of interviewing very special people. And so I would like you all to enjoy our very next guest, which is Dr. Takiya N. Robinson.
Dear God.
Okay, as I sit down with her and talk to her about her journey of getting grown.
Whoa!
Ladies and gentlemen and gentlemen, our next guest is very special to the show here at Getting Grown. They are a senior program officer for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's big business and very important. And essentially what they're going to do is come today to explain to us what it is they do, what it means, because I feel like this is a guest who has definitely been on the show before. And yeah, she's going to come and she's going to explain exactly what she does. Right. We've spoken to many people in similar fields, but we've never interviewed our very own Dr. Takiya Nicole Robinson, the first of her name, senior program officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
This show is total chaos.
It is. And negativity and positivity. Oh my God. I'm so excited for you to be the guest of Getting Grown this week, sister. How does it feel to be on the other side of
very
things?
Very strange.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous.
I mean, she was quite hesitant, probably mainly because I'm the one who'll be doing the interviewing.
Listen, okay, I'm excited to share. I feel like you guys talk to me all the time and should know all of my business. Howsoever,
listen, I feel like we share our business in fragments because, you know, we have so many others who come and join us. And yes, we've talked about parts of our trajectory, but I think it's really nice to be able to do it in this way where we can sit down, because I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know what a senior program officer does.
That's fair.
But I do know who Bill and Melinda Gates are. So when you first came and told me that was going to be your new position, I almost flipped the table at the restaurant. But I would like to know how you got to this particular place, right? We have talked about your journey through your PhD, mm-hmm. Loosely and tightly.
Loosely and tightly.
But how did you arrive to this space here today?
You know, to answer your question, I'm going to start with giving some context to explain what a Please. Senior program officer does.
Yes, thank you.
So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is one of the largest philanthropic organizations in the country.
That's people who do stuff for other people.
Yes, and people who invest money, resources to address different public concerns. Mm-hmm. I should say to address concerns, public, you know, I guess. But the foundation is it's a really large foundation with lots of different departments and, mm-hmm. and fields and areas. And I work on the post-secondary success team.
So many words.
So that work is around, so it's about funding and addressing issues in post-secondary spaces. So post-secondary means after secondary education. Mm-hmm. So whether it be like college, trade school, technical training, okay. adult, any sort of post-secondary education, mm-hmm. being college, whatever other educational options are after secondary ed. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm a senior program officer. That means that there are series of investments mm-hmm. that I co-design and manage. I identify mm-hmm. partners, individuals that are out there that have different levels of expertise and know-how mm-hmm. and can assist the foundation in any one of its initiatives and they're funded through grants and contracts. So okay. as a program officer, a senior program officer, my role is around contributing to the strategy and the mm-hmm. design that informs a really large scale initiatives on the post-secondary success team right now. And I have a series of investments that I manage mm-hmm. under a particular body of work that are designed to contribute to that strategy in a very particular way. And so I got to this place. We talked about it a little bit on the last episode, or the episode where we talked about my step and C-step journey, mm-hmm. those programs. Yes. I was a great benefactor of those programs. Mm-hmm. Those programs, I wouldn't be where I am today without okay. them.
So pause. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to some of those programs okay. because we did talk about step and C-step mm-hmm. A week or two ago
right.
on the show. And that was one of the programs that your mother enrolled you mm-hmm. in, you and Brian, and yeah. For you all, success. What are some of the other programs that she had you all in?
Well, just sort of similar programs. So Step and C-Step was funded by New York State, but mm-hmm. federally, there are programs like Upward Bound, mm-hmm. programs like Head Start, mm-hmm. You know, some government funded, but all around educating children or supporting the children's educational experiences, mm-hmm. POSSE. There's all kinds of programs that are out there mm-hmm. For students of all ages. And so I was a part of those programs all throughout my trajectory. Mm-hmm. And my mom had me in just about anything because she was committed on making sure that we had structured activity, but mm-hmm. also making sure that we were afforded information and resources.
Right.
She, you know, as I shared on the show, on the other show where we talked about it, you know, because of a lack of information, mm-hmm. She was not positioned to, you know, she wasn't aware of the options that she had available to her in her own educational journey. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to make sure at the very least we knew what was out there. Mm-hmm. And so me being a part of these programs and recognizing that, you know, they helped me so much. When I finished my master's degree at UConn mm-hmm. and I was looking for a job, I called my program director from the CSET program. His name was Mr. Uriel Reed.
Uriel with a U.
Uriel with a U.
Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Uriel. I'm
Mr. Reed. The legendary.
Were you named after someone?
I would. I think so. I don't remember him being a junior.
I don't know him, but I would think Uriel. His name was Mr. Reed. That has to be a name that has got to be passed down. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Mr. Reed was. I called Mr. Reed. Was like, I have these degrees and I don't have a job. And he was like, we're going to get you one. And okay. he started calling around.
It would be a man that Uriel would talk like that.
He helped me and I put me in contact with another woman mm-hmm. At Mercy College who happened to be looking for a program, an assistant director of mm-hmm. her program.
And I applied. Her name was Barbara Jones Jones.
Oh my God. You're real Barbara Jones.
I told you about Barbara Jones Jones.
Black people are Barbara Jones Jones.
Yes, honey. Barbara Jones Jones, the legendary.
So bad you got to say
Barbara
it twice.
Jones Jones. Barbara Jones was her maiden name, and she married a man with the last name Jones, and she hyphenated.
Because that's what bad bitches do. That's what we do. I would love to be the very first Jade Washington Washington. Can you imagine?
I started working with her.
Okay, Barbara Jones Jones.
Yes, as assistant director of these programs. And as someone who was a part of the programs and now working for the programs, mm-hmm. I felt like the programs were not being talked about in the right way, right? It was like the great work, the level of investment mm-hmm. that I felt like these programs made into my life and my family. Mm-hmm. When you read about them on websites or in books or in papers or reports, mm-hmm. it was just like, oh yeah, you know, it's just 60 kids come to the campus.
We give them peanut butter and jelly.
It's a grant, you know, it's a grant program, you know. We take some field
and
trips.
And you were one of these kids in these programs.
Yeah.
And then you, and so when, at what point were you like, nah, this shit don't work right?
That point.
Okay.
So I felt like, oh, I said, the ways in which this program have invested in my life are not adequately represented in literature and space. People are not talking about them. This is serious
stuff.
How
old were you when you thought about this?
I was maybe 23.
Wow. When I was 23, I was getting high and like, fucking niggas. Like, and you were thinking about how to change programs. And this is why you are where you are today.
Yes. I just felt like, I know that there's so much work done. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's my close relationships. Mr. Reed, other people, they mentored me. And so I was very close to them. Mm-hmm. And so I knew what kind of labor they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh.
And yet you aren't. Ladies and gentlemen, LaToya is in the building.
That scared me.
I know. I can't handle it. You're fine. I'm interviewing Kia.
It's very, very uncomfortable.
What?
She's interviewing me.
This is one kitchen table. We're going to interview each other for two different kitchen tables.
Step out of your comfort zone.
That's right, LaToya.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, yes, continue.
So
Barbara Jones Jones yes. programs.
These programs, I felt like the work that they were doing and the work that I had benefited from, I'm like, no one's talking about it. So I was like, so how can we fix that? What are the things that we can do?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, I have one master's degree.
Wait, you had a master's degree by the time you were 23 years old.
Yes.
And what else?
I had a master's. That was, yes, that's
it. It was a master's
that's
in
the
what?
End of the sentence. Human development and family studies.
And you got that from
UConn.
From UConn, yes, home of the Huskies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
most recently they just won the championship.
Congratulations!
Come on,
which one? Basketball?
Yes,
the women's and men's.
The men.
Okay,
the men. I'm sorry.
You talked. You spoke.
I'm so sorry. We're
okay, so
distracted.
So you went to UConn for
I went to UConn, got the
master's. Okay.
And now I'm working for Barbara Jones Jones.
Barbara Jones Jones.
And I'm realizing that, you know, I'm also sort of leading these programs, mm-hmm. trying to make a name for myself on this mm-hmm. campus. And, you know, I'm like, I'm working in education, but mm-hmm. my degree's not really in education. So maybe I'll go get another degree.
What was your degree in?
Human development, family studies.
Because okay.
at that point, when I graduated, I got my bachelor's from Manhattanville. I went to studied psychology.
Okay.
I went straight to UConn after Manhattanville, mm-hmm. mainly because I did not have a job or any earthly idea what I was supposed
so
to be doing.
So you said I'm going to stay in school.
Yes, because okay. I felt like I'm good at this. I should continue.
Really?
Yes.
Real.
That was my rationale.
Okay.
It was very much like, okay, I know how to do this. I can do this. I can get paid to do this. This
now,
is wild.
You went to UConn. You moved to Connecticut.
It was a very dark time in my life.
I was
yes.
like, because you know it's haunted there. It's haunted in Connecticut.
What a
with
time.
The souls of colonialism.
Gee
but anyway,
whiz.
All right, so continue on. So you asked Barbara Jones Jones for a job.
Yes, and mm-hmm. she gave it to me. Okay. And I was working there on the campus doing well, mm-hmm. but realizing that my training, specific training, mm-hmm. was cool. But if I wanted to sort of continue to grow, mm-hmm. I needed to get some more specialized training in higher ed.
What did you think you were going to do when you got your undergrad in psychology and you got your master's in human development?
I thought that I wanted to work with programs, but mm-hmm. like youth, younger, like adolescent. I thought okay. I wanted to do like high school, like middle school, high school girls.
Like actually interact with them on a daily basis.
What a wild time for me.
Me knowing you as a human being. Wow.
You see the foolishness of youth.
I also, yeah, I do. And I also see.
When you think that you know things and, oh, I think I'd like to do that, but you really don't know yourself.
It reiterates, you know, the fact that we are allowed to change our minds.
Absolutely.
And the fact that we don't know anything.
Yes, yeah. When we think we know it all. Because I'm like, you know, on campus, I'm 21 years old. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go work. Maybe I'll be the director of like the YWCA or something.
Oh, poor. I'm sorry. I should have never said that. But I mean, y'all know what time. Listen. I'm sorry. I'm working on myself. I mean, listen, we all know what I did that this weekend. I did it. Somebody was like, oh, he's in social work. I was like, so he'll never make money. I'm sorry. Continue on.
So yes, that's what I thought I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I worked one semester. I had a graduate assistantship.
No. Yeah.
And they sent me into Hartford High School in Hartford, Connecticut.
The ghetto.
And I said, dear God, if you get me out of this, I swear I'll never darken this door ever again.
And how long were you there?
I was at UConn or at the high school?
At the Hartford High School.
About 8 weeks.
Okay. Yo. I've been to Hartford for 8 hours and it was too long.
I said, oh, this will never do.
Okay. So that was where you said, okay, things have to change. All right. Fast forward. Let's go back to where we were.
This can't be it. Okay. So this is a cool story. I'm at UConn, right? Mm-hmm. We're all over the place. Forgive us.
No, this is about Kia and her trajectory.
We're at UConn, right? And I'm this is me like roaming around the campus. That first semester with UConn was one of the whitest times of my life.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, I don't know what the numbers are now, but at that point, the, you know, UConn was like 4% African American.
It's not lost on me that Huskies are snow dogs.
Well, you are putting things together. And so I was on that campus literally for months, and it was, and I had not seen any Black people. I was the only Black person in my apartment building, my dorm.
Oh, no.
At my job.
Oh, no.
In my degree program.
Oh, no.
And I was on that campus for weeks and was like, what is this place?
Did you have a friend?
I did know someone there.
Okay.
Like, you know, a family friend in White Plains was like, oh, my niece go to UConn. And so I had that girl's phone number. And maybe like one or two nights in orientation, like we met up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were in different programs. Mm-hmm. I didn't see her much after that. So I was by myself.
Oh.
So here I am on campus and I see a Black girl and I follow her.
Okay. And who was that?
I don't know. I maintained a safe distance. I just wanted to see where she was going. I said, if I follow her, perhaps she will lead me to the other Blacks on this campus. Because I don't know where they are.
Yo,
perhaps I should just follow her.
So you like, you legit.
Very catch a predator. Very terrible. It's not something that I'm proud of, but it is something that I did.
How long did you follow her for?
For, I mean, I would say it was a good 15 minutes.
Were you ducking and hiding behind?
No, I just maintained a safe distance. I was probably maybe 30 to 40 feet, but I could see her. She was in my line of sight.
She had to have seen you.
I don't think so. I was farther enough back. And so she's walking. She's outside. Mm. I'm literally coming out of my dorm. And I'm like, oh, a Black girl. And I don't know where I was headed, but I said, I am following this young lady.
And where does she lead you?
To the student union.
Okay.
And this is the creepiest part. I waited. She got on the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
I waited downstairs and watched what floor she got off.
And then you got off and you said, who's your favorite artist?
No, I went. I didn't, at that point I lost her because I didn't see her again. So I don't know. Maybe she wasn't even going where I ended up.
Okay.
But I just took the elevator to the fourth floor, and on the fourth floor was the African American Cultural Center.
Stop! It was God.
I said,
maybe she was an angel.
Have mercy. Look at what you've done.
Huh.
So I went in there, right? and went straight to the director. Now, the director, another. See, my life has been sprinkled with so many wonderful Black women who had lots of personality and different things about. And this was the season of my life that was impacted by Dr. Willena Kimpson Price.
Yo, these names today are incredible
because
to my
the
spirit.
Women, the Black women have guided me through.
Yeah, and you know, also, like, we've lost those good, sturdy Black names, like you
yes,
said.
Yes, Willena Kimpson Price. And this is what I love. She was from she was from Atlanta. She went to Spelman.
Okay.
And she had
was
a very,
she a Delta?
Yes.
Okay.
Her voice had a very high timbre,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she, Takiya, right? Takiya, very loud, no matter where you were. But it was just a, not Takiya, like way down, like, yes, Dr. Price. So I went directly into her office and I was like, do you have a job for me? Is there anything that I can do here? I would love to return to this place every day.
Every day.
Because I have a horrible graduate assistantship. And don't make me go back.
Oh, right? I was like, I'm getting a
literally walked to her office and she was like, child, sit down. Like, and I love Dr. Price. She had, she wore her stockings every day.
Oh.
And so you could hear her coming down the hall.
Yeah. She wouldn't have liked me. Ladies who wear stockings every day don't like my kind.
You hear her coming down the hall. You hear her keys and her stockings.
Uh-huh. She said, well, won't be no chafing over here.
Listen, keys and stockings. And then she hit the corner and she see you because my desk was at the end of the hallway. She hit the corner. Takiya, how long you been here? Very like, so. Me and Dr. Price developed a program. She was like, you know, actually, I do have something for you to do. I need your help. And I'm like, bet. And quit my job. I said, I'm not. I'm working over here now.
Okay.
See y'all later. Quit my job. Started working at the AACC because they wanted to address, they were having, because it was such a white place, the campus was like bleeding Black students. They would come for a semester, they would drop out. And so the provost had asked her, like, can we develop something? We need to do something. And so I worked with Dr. Price to develop this peer mentoring program that very simply matched freshmen with upperclassmen students. And it was a really successful program, addressed the attrition issues. Everything got better. The program was a hit. Everyone built all this community. And I realized I could do this for a career. Like, I was like, oh, I could do this. I know how to do this.
All from following Lakeisha.
All from following some.
To the African-American
Black girl.
Study
she
hall.
Had micro braids.
Okay. Well, she, you.
I don't remember anything. I didn't see her face. I just saw that she had micro braids. And I was like, oh, she is Black. I'm following her.
Okay. Yes. And what year was this?
This was in 2004.
Say my name, say my name. That was the time. Okay, so you got there. And then what happened next? Because you didn't stay at UConn.
I did not, thank God. I left UConn in 2006. That's when I started working for Barbara Jones Jones.
Okay. I'm sorry.
And then I left Barbara Jones Jones and started working at Columbia because I got into that.
And I remember the Columbia days.
Yes. So I went to Columbia to get more specialized training in higher education. And when I was working there, I was a department administrator, but I was running a program that was funded by the National Science Foundation.
And what kind of program was that?
It was a traineeship. So it was designed to provide doc students from underrepresented, doctoral students in engineering from underrepresented backgrounds.
Okay.
You know, with support, money, resources, programming to help get them through their training programs, their doctoral training. And so I was the lead administrator for that program. And was like, I really like this work. And again, feeling like the work was not well represented in the literature or people weren't talking about it, you know, I started to ask questions. And I went to another mentor. My supervisor there was, she was not a Black woman, but she was a real spitfire woman from the UK.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Married. She didn't take no shit.
Yes.
She was a engineer, civil engineering, engineering mechanics. She was one woman, faculty, 60 men in her.
So she was a...
So she did not let them have it.
Yeah, she wasn't letting nobody run over her.
She was like, excuse me, son, I'm talking.
And she did it with an accent.
Yes. Yeah. Very shadily.
Yeah.
So I would just sit in those meetings in awe of her, like, I think she is the best woman I've ever seen.
And she worked in programs...
She was a dean. She was a faculty member.
Okay.
And so I asked her, and she was like, Takiya, you're doing a great job here, and you ask all the right questions. And she was like, what do you want to be? And I told her, I was like, I don't know. Well, I could see myself leading an institution or working in administration. And she was like, wonderful. When are you going to get your PhD? I was like.
Yep. And let me tell you all something. At this time, Kia was living in a cute little apartment in Harlem.
I was having a great time.
You know,
time.
We were having a good time. We were drinking.
A really good time.
We were hanging. I was the only one smoking out the window.
And what's the time?
Smoking out the window.
At Bobby's house.
Yeah, at Bobby's house. And then one day,
wow,
you showed up and said, what?
Because she said, you have to get a PhD. She was like, if you want to be a leader in mm-hmm. higher education or in educational spaces, especially on college campuses, you have to have at least the credentials that the faculty have, like mm-hmm. at minimum. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're not going to respect you. Mm-hmm. They're not going to listen to anything that you say.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, well, I'm okay with that. She was like, no, 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 no.
Let me get you together real quick.
And she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to.
Do you remember what she said to you specifically, not to cut you off, that turned that for you?
We were in a meeting, actually. Mm-hmm. And I had presented an idea. And it was one of those times when you say something and everyone goes, yes, mm-hmm. great.
Mm-hmm.
And then some white man says the exact thing that you said and they're like, genius!
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, infuriating.
So that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Culligan saw me like adjusting in my seat. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know this nigga. What?
That's the British lady.
Yes.
Okay.
And so this happened after she had said that to me and mm-hmm. I told her, I'm okay with being. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like, and so she saw me and she mm-hmm. came back and was like standing in the corner of my office, leaning on a doorpost. Like,
what was that?
I thought you said it didn't matter
what was
to you. It looked like you were very upset.
Mm. Were you?
And I was.
Was it I enough was,
and she was
to
like,
push ya?
That's the kind of stuff that's going to continue to happen to you. People will, she was like, and I hate it. I wish it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just where we are.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to these doctoral programs. There were some other stories there that I feel like I've told around sort of. I wanted to stay in Columbia. Mm-hmm. That didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
I was encouraged to apply other places, but I was like, nah, I'm going to have to move, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I had some more wonderful, brilliant Black women who were sort of pushing me, like, this is something that you need to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up applying. Blanca Vega, Dr. Blanca Vega, she said, apply to 3 programs. If you don't get into any of them, I'll leave you alone.
Okay.
Because I was like, I'm good, man. Y'all come on, blah, blah, blah. Dr. Blanca Vega and Dr. Sosanya Jones, both mm-hmm. of them were in the doctoral program at Columbia. And both of them were like, you have to go. Mm-hmm. You have to do this. And they really encouraged me. So I was like, all right, 3 programs I can do.
Okay.
And because I was thinking, I'm not going to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
I got in.
Mm, yeah, because you stay doing that. And then that stays happening.
I got in.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up going to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all have met Dr. Friesbitt. Y'all know yes. how she's been. And so, yeah, I've been. So I got into these programs and that was my research. My research became about doing some qualitative study
mm-hmm.
of these programs to tell a more representative story, a more compelling narrative, mm-hmm. having more evidence of the value mm-hmm. of these kinds of investments that the government was making into students.
And so, speaking from personal experience.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So as a student and as an administrator mm-hmm. and now as a researcher. And yes. so I love research. It's been something that I've always been interested in since high school. And so naturally, I found myself in a PhD program,
mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it ever since. So from there, I like to think of myself as a scholar practitioner, someone mm-hmm. who does research,
mm-hmm.
but who is, I think I'm much more excited about translating that research into practice.
Absolutely.
How do we improve things based upon the great things that we're learning?
Mm-hmm.
And so now... The coolest part about my work right now as a senior program officer is that I've now transitioned from being a student of these programs to leading these programs to studying these programs. Now I'm a part of the people who fund these wow. programs.
Wow.
And so I'm able to bring all of those different perspectives and experiences into the rooms of the people who have the resources
mm-hmm.
and say, if we're going to invest in students, if we're going to invest in institutions, if we're going to invest in equity and inclusion,
mm-hmm.
this is the way in which we can do it to really make sure that we get the return
mm-hmm.
and sort of also see the kind of change and transformation that we say that we seek.
I love that, sis. And this is actually the clearest.
Really?
Yeah, I think because we've never got to, like, I sat with you all through your.
Yes.
All through your.
On the FaceTime.
Writing your dissertation.
Yes,
and
yes.
Doing your research. Mm-hmm. And I also know that was a really heavy time for you as well. You've shared it before, but for the sake of this particular mm-hmm. episode, can you remind folks of the trauma that you also dealt with in the middle of yeah. writing your dissertation?
So I wrote my dissertation, I would say 2015. I defended my dissertation proposal like October 2015. Mm-hmm. And I was really at that point, my heart was set on graduating by 2016. Mm-hmm. And so I would say from October to May, mm-hmm. that's when I was in the trenches working, mm-hmm. working. Mm-hmm. and was getting prepared to defend my dissertation in June. I was scheduled to defend my dissertation on June 16th. Mm-hmm. And as you know, on June 12th, I learned that my brother passed.
Yeah.
And so it was writing, investing, pouring myself. Because, you know, when you write a dissertation, when you come to this stage of the work, mm-hmm. you really have to sort of take a step back. Mm-hmm. All the things I grew up in undergrad, I always worked and went to school. Mm-hmm. I always maintained, you know, I served at church and I would hang out with my friends. I'd like to have balance because that's who I am as a person. Mm-hmm. But when you're writing your dissertation, you have to focus.
Yeah.
And so I literally took a leave of absence from church, mm-hmm. which is something I'd never done and mm-hmm. didn't know that I could do. But
wait,
shout
what
out
does
to
that
me.
Even mean?
Well, I was serving in music ministry, and we would sing
okay.
weekly.
Okay.
And so
singing and serving. Got you. Okay.
And so, because I was serving music ministry.
Okay.
It's not the only way to serve, but that was just a particular way. Mm-hmm.
I usually think of the ladies with the gloves and the plates.
That wasn't me.
Okay.
In the choir stand.
Shut up, Toya.
I was in the choir stand, but I really had to focus in. Mm-hmm. I had a roommate, then I got a studio. Like mm-hmm. I was like, you know,
mm-hmm. I remember.
And Jay stayed up with me because mm-hmm. I mean I would have to work during the day because you know bills be billing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I wrote my dissertation, no lie, between the hours of 10 p.m. and 3 a.m.
And you were working at a think tank while you were doing,
yes.
Where were you working?
I was a graduate student researcher. Mm-hmm. So I would do somebody else's research during the day and my own research at night.
That is buns. That is
But that's
buns.
What happens when you're in grad school. Like yeah. that's the journey. That's the cost of it. And so.
What does that look like? Research for me is Google and like, you know.
Researchers, I think, I like to think of researchers as people who are trained to ask and answer questions.
Okay. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about if we want to learn something, mm-hmm. We are trained to know how to craft the answers that will help us to position us to learn as much as we can about any given thing.
Okay.
So I'm a qualitative researcher, mm-hmm. which means that the work I was doing then was qualitative research. So whether it be focus groups or interviews, mm-hmm. those would be transcribed and analyzed. So,
wow.
you know, it would be a body of data and I would be analyzing data, reading, pulling out themes, coding themes, writing up analysis.
Lots of highlighters, I imagine.
Lots of highlighters, lots of post-its. Some whiteboards.
Yes, PhD Mary
yes,
Jane.
Yes, and you know, I'm an Excel sheet kind of girl.
Yeah.
I love to, you know, get my themes at the top mm-hmm. and, you know.
Tabs.
So, yes, all of that. That's the research is, you know, asking and answering the questions, getting the answers to the questions that we have mm-hmm. around different phenomena. And so I was working really hard and I poured so much, didn't get it. And I feel like I missed out on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go home as much, didn't see my family as much because I was so, so focused.
Mm-hmm. And how were they, how was their response to that?
I think that everyone knew that I was in the zone mm-hmm, and they mm-hmm. didn't, you know, I didn't get any flack about it.
Okay.
And honestly, one of the last conversations I had with Brian, mm-hmm. I was disappointed because I wanted to walk in May.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I didn't mm-hmm. finish in time to graduate in May. And I was disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was like, girl, who cares? He's like, you finish in May, you finish in June. What's the big deal?
That is a very Brian response. Right.
But I was like, but I want everyone to come to graduation. Well, whenever the graduation is, we coming.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in May, whether it's in December, whenever it is, we're coming. So, girl, I mean, stop crying. Like, just like that. And I was like, okay. Like, because he just made it okay, mm-hmm. you know? Because
mm-hmm.
I was like, I felt like I had disappointed my mom and my grandparents. We've been planning everyone to come for this graduation in May. And I had to tell them that I wasn't going to be finished until mm-hmm. June, which meant that I wouldn't walk until... And they was like, girl, don't nobody care.
See?
Like, don't nobody care about that. But yes, it was... So I felt... I was feeling like I was on the precipice of being able to breathe again because mm-hmm. I had been in this hole working
mm-hmm.
on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as I felt like I was getting ready to come out of this hole, it all caved in.
Yeah.
And we lost Brian.
Yeah.
And so it was a tough time.
Yeah.
Very, very tough time. But, you know, it took that time. I took mm-hmm. about 3 to 4 months
mm-hmm.
to really deal with that
mm-hmm.
and be there for my family.
And how long after his passing were you able to defend that dissertation?
September.
So June to September. And you still, I mean, to this day, you're still
mm-hmm.
you're still coping, you're still grieving, you're still dealing.
Every day.
Still healing.
Every day.
How did you feel after they announced you as Dr. Robinson?
Relieved.
Mm-hmm.
I was very relieved. Mm-hmm. I was very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a different kind of grateful.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you'd be thankful for things, but sometimes it'd be like, I earned this.
Yeah.
In so many ways. Like, mm-hmm. I've done the work, mm-hmm. but I've also been through.
Yeah.
And it gave, I feel like I could think about things with a whole different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It made every, I saw the sky differently. Mm-hmm. Everything felt different.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, weirdly transitioning into sort of where we are now, my grief has sort of shaped my work in so many profound ways, ways mm-hmm. that I never would have anticipated.
Such as, can you give us a couple of examples?
I don't know that I would be the researcher that I am if I'd not had that major loss. And of course, I would give it all back for Brian to be here. But I'm just saying that for anyone who might be grieving,
mm-hmm.
You are forever changed, but that change can have different kinds of returns.
Mm-hmm.
So I study change and transformation.
Mm-hmm.
The work that I've been doing most recently has been around institutional transformation and thinking more specifically around what are the things that individuals and organizations need to know in mm-hmm. order to sort of negotiate change.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to catalyze different kinds of change or transformation in their lives, how do they go about doing that? Or in their existence, how do they go about doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And so weirdly segue in here, that work, that researcher, me studying change and transformation even informs our conversations here.
Absolutely.
And it even informs getting grown. Because what is adulting if it's not a series of transformations? It's mm-hmm. like a series. We're negotiating a series of changes and transformation in our lives. Our lives are consistently transforming and evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And so my training as a researcher, I think, shapes the way that we do this work mm-hmm. of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really been full circle for me because I'm just coming to a place of accepting that it's not that my work is split. I used to feel like, oh, mm-hmm. I podcast on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, this is sort of like one phase of who I am. But I see now that all of it contributes to the way that I show up. And that this is very much scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've talked about that on the show before, too. Like, the sharing of information
mm-hmm.
And the way that we learn out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Is all about publication. It's dissemination in the same ways that me analyzing that data and writing and publishing, it's the same sort of mechanism.
But absolutely. I'm sorry,
what were you going to say?
No, I cut you off. I just think also on a spiritual level, you know, you have told Brian so many times, don't you show up in my dreams.
No.
You know, and I think...
And he's listened, thank God.
Oh, very much so.
Because he knows me.
Right. He showed up in other people's, but not Kia's,
yes.
to deliver messages. But I think he has been with you continuously through this journey.
Absolutely. Even
in helping to kind of pave road, open that road
without
and pave
question.
That way for without the work question. That you're doing as well.
Without question. Like,
and
I know
it's beautiful. So how do you feel now? Now that you, so starting from the beginning, you being in these programs mm-hmm. to now working with people who fund these programs and actually help to create these programs and revise these programs so that they assist all of the little Takiyas out there. How do you feel right now? Where you at?
I feel like it was worth it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm where I belong. There's, there's so many times where I felt like I was trying to figure out mm-hmm. who I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like I have a clarity about that. Mm-hmm. That has been a long time coming. But when I am in rooms and able to, well, actually, or when I'm able to raise my finger or to mm-hmm. help someone who didn't have, a certain perspective or a lived experience, when I'm able to help them to understand the way in which their practice may be unintentionally mm-hmm. problematic, mm-hmm. biased, mm-hmm. racist, like, mm-hmm. I'm able to make a difference in that way. And so it's like, these are the rooms that I'm supposed to be in. And I'm very grateful to learn this side of the work. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about hopefully a future in this work. The program that the team that I'm on now is this really huge initiative called Transformation at Scale. Mm-hmm. The foundation has funded 6 intermediaries to the tune of $100 million.
I don't even know what the fuck that looks like.
No, but it's so powerful. And I'm not saying that to brag.
No, it's powerful.
This is a lot. The gravity of that mm-hmm. is that we're hoping to create a container where institutions who have aspirations to change and transform for equity and student mm-hmm. success, mm-hmm. for them to have access to other organizations and supports and systems and mechanisms and funds and money to undo and literally dismantle the systems of oppression that exist within higher ed spaces. And we're helping to make sure that people have the knowledge, the know-how, the awareness, mm-hmm. And the skills to do that important work of actually eradicating and dismantling problematic systems and structures and creating new ones. Mm. I think it is really super powerful. And for me to be able to sort of have bring all of the experience that I bring into those spaces with folks who may have never worked in higher ed, mm-hmm. but are uniquely positioned and have power and influence and money. And I'm able to say, let's put it over here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. let's fund these institutions. Mm-hmm. And if these institutions are not typically funded, okay, well, let me tell you why. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And given that, let me tell you the ways in which these institutions require a different kind of support.
Yes.
So, having those conversations has been really dope. And I didn't even know that this kind of job existed. Mm-hmm. One of the major findings from my dissertation were funding agencies need to be more involved. They just give the money and that's it. Right?
It's true, though.
It is true. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my findings. And now I'm able to say, now I'm actually able to influence mm-hmm. one of the largest funding agencies in
the
this country.
Real kind of influencer. Okay? Fuck a internet. Oh, fuck God. A TikTok.
Oh, God. No, it's a blessing. I'm very grateful. Mm-hmm. I have more gratitude than I can probably articulate. And I know that my steps are ordered. And I've lived a life of surrender.
Right.
In that
praise break.
In that, when you've been through some hard, hard things.
Yeah, man.
And you have real conversations with the Lord, mm-hmm. like you
I
have reduced me down.
On.
Yes. Uh-huh. I was like, you have okay, point your point is taken. Mm-hmm. I have nothing. I am down
you
at my
can't
lowest.
Whack-a-mole no oh, right. more, God.
So I mean, mm-hmm. it's on you. Mm-hmm. You tell me where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You put me in the spaces I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You put the words that are supposed to be in my mouth in there and I will do it. And it seems like it took some time for me to find my legs. I had some Bambi legs for a little while, but I finally feel like I am in that space.
I love that. And you in that space. Ladies, gentlemen, thinlemen, thadies. She'll do all of that in a pair of Jordans, okay? That is how we're going to close that out, because you always remain authentically yourself and you're doing incredible work that we, our babies deserve. Like, we deserve to have this.
And you know, I wouldn't have been sitting here if you wouldn't stay up. Jay was on FaceTime. When I was writing my dissertation on my laptop, Jay would be cleaning her kitchen or cleaning chicken or whatever it is she was doing over there.
Sometimes I'd fall asleep.
That's fine. But she would not leave me by myself. And, you know, sometimes we would talk. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we would just sit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like she was in the room with me.
I came to D.C. and like,
yeah,
just kind of hung out with your roommate's dog. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, all the time. Just never.
Yeah.
No.
Toya,
standing on the couch.
Toya and Kia. Well, that pets, the next episode of Takiya's.
We'll have to have Toya
who is Takiya
to support me. We will have Toya to support me as I tell you guys about that, because she understands.
I know how uncomfortable you were to do this kitchen table.
Extremely. I feel like I rambled a bit, so I'm sorry.
You didn't ramble at all. You actually gave a really clear understanding of what you do. And like I said, I really get it now. And I think it's super important work for, I always knew it was important.
Thank you.
But now I'm like, you know what? Our next generations are for real going to benefit off of this. This is what we need. So we are grateful for you. We thank you. That's right, Bill and Melinda. Y'all better hire a real nigga in the building. I said it. She didn't.
I did not. Let the record reflect.
Yeah, when's your TED Talk?
Oh, I don't know. Tell the TED people to call me.
Okay, TEDx. Don't have me on your line. I will call. It's not going to be as eloquent as whatever Kia is going to deliver on the stage.
I don't even know what it would be
about. Get a real bitch in the building. Thank you, sister, for coming and sitting with me at the kitchen table.
This was not as pain-filled as I imagined.
You see, all you had to do was talk about what you do. This is what you do. Stand
this is what
in
I
it.
Do.
Ground in it.
Ground in it.
And we'll see you all for the next segment.
I deserve
Welcome back, everybody. Let's talk self-care really quickly. I have a self-care. It's very random. And it's probably very small, but I think it's something that folks would appreciate because it is something that has changed my life. I have a wonderful new lip balm that I am obsessed with.
Oh, I love a good lip balm. Who's it by?
It's by Laneige.
Mm.
Yes, honey, down to the Sephora. You know, the VIB was just last week.
Oh, yes.
So
this
is the Lip Glowy Balm. I got the grapefruit flavor.
Ooh.
Now, this girl is worth every penny. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
You know, Laneige also has a lip mask.
Oh.
Right?
Yes. That's what I have.
Yes.
With the little spoon thing.
Yes. Oh. Yes. So after you do your, once you do your nighttime regimen or your morning regimen, your skincare regimen, you do this lip mask and that sort of infuses some like intense moisture into your lip situation.
Yes.
So this is kind of like the lip masks, like it's like the daytime for like if you just want to have a little lip mask in your purse.
Oh.
It is the Lip Glowy Balm. And baby,
let me get that. Right
it comes now. It comes in several flavors. Like there's a berry, there's a birthday cake. The grapefruit is a very nice citrus moment, but it has a very pleasant scent. It is so extraordinarily moisturizing. It almost gives lip gloss.
Oh.
But it penetrates the lip.
So you feel the moisture.
So you really feel it.
Oh, and, let me get that right now.
You know, I put some on before we started recording, and it's just like I'm like, wow, this is why the girls pay the coin.
Absolutely.
It's worth
absolutely.
It. So if you have some points down to the Sephora.
I do.
You have a little extra coinage. I know, you know.
Okay, so the Laneige Lip, hold on.
Lip Glowy Balm. I got it in grapefruit.
Here we go.
It's a winner. It's a winner. I'm telling you, that has been my self-care. It's just a great treat for your lips.
We know as we're headed into the summer season, we're drinking water, the lips can get dry.
Oh, yes, very much so. And I, you know, I try to moisturize. I also use the Laneige lip mask because I smoke blunts. So I scrub.
So the scrub, yes.
And then I moisturize, you know what I'm saying, and do the best that I can there. So I'm very excited for this because I'm constantly, I use this Vaseline.
No. And that's, hey, girl, let me tell you, if I look at my purse right now, it's a tube of Vaseline in there because that's one of those things that you just got to carry in your purse.
Always. What?
Let me show you. I am real. I'm a real auntie, honey.
Yes. You've got the blue top.
Blue top.
This is gold dust. So it's got flecks.
Yes, because they have different varieties of the Vaseline.
Yes.
Vaseline, and you know what else is very black? We should do a What's in Your Purse episode one day.
I actually think that's an incredible episode.
Oh, absolutely. Because you see, I also have me a little cocoa butter on the swivel.
Oh, so I love that glue stick cocoa butter because it's just, it's perfect. It gets your heels the way you need
it to.
Listen,
and it's really good for the webs.
Yeah, down in here, it is.
You know what I'm saying?
In between those fingers and toes.
In between the fingers and toes. Mm-hmm. You put a little on your palm. I love it.
And it just smells good. You just end up smelling like brownies.
And I love it. I usually chase my hand sanitizer with a little bit of that, you see.
Oh, I use a saffron shea butter by Crystal Irie.
Oh, yes.
And I chase my hand sanitizer with that saffron shea butter. And nigga, I be walking around here smelling like
a
spice sex
bomb. It's so good, right? Mm-hmm. I just love smelling good. It's very womanly. It makes me feel grown. But yes, that's my black woman self-care, honey. Getting my skin moisturized, keeping things right and tight, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Moisturizing situations. That. So I understand that somebody got to, I know that's right.
You know, I instead of a self-care this week, I said I wanted to do one. I know that's right. I touched on it at the top by thanking everybody who came to the Amsterdam Dopest Dinner Party, and apologies to those who had to miss out. We did have to move it a day because of travel delays that were out of our control. So the fact that we pulled it off. So I just want to say shout out to me and Santana for pulling off a dinner party internationally. Yes. Okay. Yes. Our first international dinner. I'm super proud of the both of us for being able to push forward in the most hellish of circumstances. If you want the ins and outs of that, you may go listen to last week's episode of Jaded NXT, where I gave the full redown.
Business. Yes.
Oh, sister, I gave this full rundown about how Europe whooped my motherfucking ass. Okay. Yikes. The white ancestors showed up and said, "You've been talking about us forever and we are going to whoop up on you." Oh, and I was like, "We can fight because I'm still resilient."
Oh, wow.
But they got a couple licks in. I'm not going to hold you. So it's all good.
We made it, though.
We made it, and I'm really proud of us. And I feel good about going back to Amsterdam and doing another event.
Wonderful.
I especially feel even better about bringing more food to Amsterdam because the options are slim and limited. So, not a food city, honey.
Really?
No.
You see, this Amsterdam. This goes back to what I was talking about how black people, we may not have much, but whatever we have, it's going to taste good. It's going to taste amazing. I don't care.
Because let me tell you, the best food I had was by the Surinamese, which is a South American, but Caribbean adjacent.
It is our birthright. We've worked
it is.
Hard. Yes.
We deserve to eat good food no matter what's going on in life. And
correct.
So, you know, they just don't have that. I was more disappointed than I thought I would be.
Very true. That's wow. Interesting. You know. So shout out to our folks over there. If we have any, we are praying for you.
Oh, no, I pray for them. And I told them all I pray for them and they pray for themselves. But it is the trade-off for, you know, sustainable and better quality of life as far as, you know, air and breathing and space. And so, safety. You know, everything is a trade-off. You can't have everything. I'd rather have food, but, you know, that's why everybody has choices. So anyway, I know that's right this week is I'm just shouting out Santana and I. For pulling off an international dinner party, honey.
Get it. Go ahead.
And if you're in the European area, Santana is actually doing another dinner party in Paris. Ooh. With a chef friend of ours by the name of Manuel, Chef Manny. Ooh. So make sure y'all go check out her social media. She's got all the information there, but it's going to be a diasporic Puerto Rican fest in Paris. And I promise you all, you're going to eat amazing.
Wonderful.
Between the two of them. So that's just a little plug right there for you. But y'all know how we're going to close this thing right on out.
All right.
So let's head into our petty peeves.
And I want to be very responsible of the things I say to my sister. Because everybody know I can be real petty. P-E to the T-T-Y, honey.
Hello, lovers. It is time for the petty peeves.
Oh, boy.
So I started early and I said I was going to hold off and wait for the petty peeves. Y'all know I love cleaning. You know I live for Clorox, for Comet, for, you know, the brunch stuff in a bottle, Mrs. Myers, because it just smells good, but I still mix it with bleach. Mm-hmm. Vinegar, you know, just all the things, right? Lemon. So when XD put me on to Clean Talk, i.e., TikTok's cleaning sector.
Yes, I too have dabbled.
I was excited about certain, you know, there's organization videos, there's all the things.
Mm-hmm.
But then I came across a batch of you who, so the way that people waste food on TikTok to do stupid things.
Like what?
People are also, like the ladies who spread big giant cans of nacho cheese on countertops and then crumble up, you know, lots of tortilla chips and things like, you've never seen that?
I saw that filthy woman make that spaghetti on that countertop and I'm still, I'm still
or
traumatized.
The people who are making like party punch in toilet bowls.
Oh, toilets. Jesus Christ.
Right. Like, why do we even want that? So I realized that there are cleaning people doing the same thing with cleaning products. They are mixing 9 million of them together to make this disgusting, like sludgy, gray matter. It looks like after the snow is settled in the city for a little while.
What is wrong?
And they mix it together and they just like pour more and more cleaning products into whatever apparatus, toilet, sink, bathtub, and they mix them and they're like doing this for some sort of ASMR or I don't know, like some visual ASMR, whatever the fuck. All I know is y'all are killing yourselves, first of all, because you're not supposed to be mixing all that shit together. And then you're wasting products. You're just wasting. Like, it's just wasteful. It's just Comet and Mr. Clean and Pine Sol and Mistolene and what's the other one? What's the other one? We like Fabuloso and Lysol. It's all these things mixed in foam and scrubbing bubbles and CLR and just all the shit mixed together just for the sake of making this video. It's infuriating. That's my petty peeve. Quit wasting shit. Like, what is the point of this? There is no point. If you want to show me how you clean your bathtub, cool. But all of that shit, you are wildin'.
Stop being weird.
That's it.
My petty peeve is just for adulthood, generally speaking. And I think this is also sort of like the post-shutdown, post-pandemic adulthood. Mm-hmm. Because... Mm-hmm. You know, have you ever just sat down and thought about all that we are expected to do as adults?
Oh.
It is overwhelming. Yeah. Like, what? Like day to day, when I think about it, I tweeted about how, like, at work, I meet all day. Like, literally, it's not uncommon for me to have meetings from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., maybe with 10 or 15 minutes between
It's not uncommon, unfortunately. It's just a sad state of affairs, but that's just where we are. So after work, I answer emails and sort of try to get some work done. And then, you know, it's 7-8 o'clock and I'm tired. And I think about all that I still have to do, right? And so now that I am trying to make better choices, you know, I was just thinking, I'm expected to work to sustain my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also expected to clothe, feed, and feed myself.
Yes.
I'm expected to clean my home, my property, my clothing. If I want to be healthy and well, I'm supposed to work out. I'm supposed to eat right. I'm supposed to take vitamins. I'm supposed to get 10,000 steps a day and sleep 8 hours.
Yes.
If I'm connected to any other human being, I probably have to answer phone calls, text messages, personal emails. I have to have conversations. I have interactions. I have to go outside of the house and have vitamin D. I need to shop. I have I have bills to pay. I have errands to run. And literally, that is just regular, everyday responsibility. And I am overwhelmed.
So many
I'm overwhelmed because it's like, how am I supposed to do all of this? And, you know, they're yelling at me. You know, I have to floss my teeth. I have to brush my teeth. I have to wash my face.
Twice a day, minimum.
Yes, morning and night. I have to wash my body morning and night. I have to wash my clothes, I have to wash my sheets. I just want to know how we're supposed to do all of these things and maintain some sense of sanity. I just have such a great deal of respect for you as a parent and a spouse as I think of the ways that you have to not only care for yourself, but care for other human beings. And I am stunned, shocked, and taken aback at just at the level of exhaustion that I feel. And I don't feel like I'm doing anything outside of just being an adult. But I just feel like, how the hell is this manageable? And when did it become this way?
You remember that song I opened Jessica Rose's episode with by the Ghetto Twins?
Yes.
The verse starts off by saying, if JB don't hustle, then my kid won't eat.
Period.
And if my kid don't eat, then mama won't sleep. That's the first two lines of the song.
Jeez.
I am right here with you. Already today.
Literally.
I have recorded 3 voiceovers for the Heinz podcast. I make sure you all go listen.
We're working.
Lots of,
we're working.
Noah had a play.
Yes.
Had to go to that. I recorded 3 episodes of Jade and XT. I am now on an episode of Getting Grown. Still had to figure out dinner, like you said, washing clothes, feeding the cat,
all
cleaning the house, moving my ass. You know what I'm saying? Washing
All of that.
Yeah.
I just, and I'm not complaining because I know that we all have to do it. But just sometimes sitting with the reality that it is a lot that we all have to manage. And I'm sharing this in hopes to encourage somebody who, somebody else who may be feeling overwhelmed and by just basic necessity of your everyday responsibilities. And if you are feeling overwhelmed, you are not alone. You're not doing anything wrong. This is hard, but we're doing it. And
we
think we get to be honest about how difficult it is, though.
And how tired we are.
And that's fair, right? I want to get away from these narratives that say that we are ungrateful or complaining. No, no, no. This is real.
Yeah.
And I feel maybe it would be
Oh, God, I was at the mall all day
exactly.
and my feet hurt.
I mean, I just feel like, I guess I'm sharing this to sort of say, like, if I would have seen and heard my mom and my aunties talk about how difficult it was, because I felt like it was expressed in their their affect, in their mood, their lack of sort of, you know, just their personalities, it came out. But I didn't I feel like if I would have heard my mom sort of own that adulthood is really hard work, y'all. Like, and maybe it would be easier for me to take, because I think what still strikes me, or I feel shame for being tired, because it's like, what am I doing to be tired? Everything. And everybody else is tired. And if they're not tired, they're lying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the only way you're doing this adulting thing right is if you're worn out. And maybe that's the American way.
But, oh, it is. But, it is the American way. So I've learned. We are. So I'll share my theory here that I shared with XD. After going abroad, I have since realized, which it could be very obvious, that all of the Europeans who came over here to mind other people's business were the rejects. So it was all of the black sheep and the derelicts and all of the... So the Brits sent all of their rejects to Australia. But they send a portion of them here as well, as well as the Dutch and the Portuguese and the Spaniards and whoever else came over here, and went everywhere else as well. It was the rejects of those countries. So they didn't even want them there. So they went elsewhere, put their dicks on the table because they were like, well, they don't like us where we're from. And then here we are. But all of like the really like. I'm trying to use words that I'm supposed to use. All of the ones who just really were just like the bottom of the barrel came to America, and therefore, and then instilled their bottom of the barrel ass systems here. And so it is quite ghetto in the way that we have to work in order to get by, whereas everybody else be abroad having holiday.
On holiday for months at a time.
And whatever else the fuck. We be over here like, yes, we work 70 hours a week.
Yes, for 50 years. For 50, 60 years. And we retire and enjoy the last 8 to 11 years of our lives when we when we have literally wore ourselves out.
Retirement, when niggas don't want to do nothing at this point but rock. So,
So long petty peeve. I'm very sorry, but I just, I was just sharing. I was thinking about what I could share, and I thought, hell, I'm gonna tell the truth because I can't be the only one that is looking around like.
My head is buzzing right now with exhaustion. What do you mean? You know, when you get so tired, your head is like, it's literally starts buzzing. That's where we are.
Yes.
It's a good time.
You look, and I mean, listen, opportunities to work and do things and walk in purpose are blessings. And I'm not complaining. I prayed to be in the position that I am in. But I'm just saying, learning how to manage all of this is also
a
task, a skill, something that needs to be developed. And it requires practice. Sometimes you're going to practice, like we say before, practice doesn't make perfect, it makes progress. And sometimes you have a terrible practice. And it hurts. Ooh, and it's
many times.
Awful. Most times you have a terrible practice until you continue to grow and keep get better. But that's all I'm saying, y'all. If you tired, girl, me too.
And that, my friends, is another episode of Getting Grown. Thank you to our amazing, illustrious, intelligent, shapely guest, Dr. Takiya Shapley Robinson, who came to share her journey of
Learned so much.
Becoming Dr. Robinson. And no, sis, for real, you were open and you were honest, and it was really nice to sit down and get a clear understanding of what it is you do and what also inspired that work, and how it's not just what you do, but how it ties into who you are as a person. And so I hope everybody was able to get as much from my sit down with you as I was, and take them out for the rest of the show.
Yeah, man. I want to tell you before we sort of close out in our typical fashion, next week's episode, honey, all that we ever needed to know about what has contributed to the development of the J that we have grown to know and love. You're going to get your lives, all right? Yay. One J, two cars.
One J, two cars.
Okay. So, until that time, I want you to continue to drink all of the water that your body will allow. Because, mm-hmm. listen, moisture is the key to life. Yes. What you need in life, okay? Like the songwriter said. Like money, power, and
what you need in life.
Yes. Just like money, power, and respect. You also want to moisturize your mind by attending to the business that is yours and yours alone.
Because when you attend to other people's business, you sell 75 copies of your gospel CD.
678, if you're wondering the exact number. Because Nene said, when you do dirty, you can't win when you're dirty.
And Monique said, when you do clownery, you do clownery the clown comes back.
The clown comes back to light. We should have known then that she was out of her mind. Either way.
What?
Yeah, you also want to moisturize your skin. Tell them why, sis.
Because your black will, I'm not even going to do her like that. It will crack if it's dry. If it's dry. I'm going to leave this person out of it. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars. And who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.